Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. And now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us.
Matthew chapter 26 is where we will be in our message here this morning, and I'm today's kind of a special day. I don't know if you are aware of this or not. You're probably not, because nobody keeps track of this but me, but this is my 100th message in the book of Matthew, so that's a pretty special milestone for me to get to number 100. So we started this series all the way back in January of 2023, if you can remember back that far. That's almost 2.5 years ago that we started this study. And so we've taken a couple breaks for different summer series and Christmas series, but we've been journeying through this book for almost 2.5 years. And it's about maybe 4, 5, 6 more messages, and we'll be finished. And I don't know about you, but I'm a little sad about that. I've really enjoyed making my way through this book. It's been a life-changing journey for me. I hope it has been for you as well. I hope you've learned as much as I have as we've made our way through this book. I hope you've grown as we've made our way through it. And I am especially excited about today's passage and what the Lord has for us. I think it's one that we all need to hear. And there's something in here for each and every one of us. And we're going to, just so you know, we're going to jump around a little bit as we get to these final chapters. I'm going to save the passage on the institution of the Lord's Supper. I'm going to save that for a couple of weeks when we partake of communion together. And we've already looked at a lot of Matthew 27 and 28 through our Easter series as we've spent time there over the last couple of days. But today I want to focus on two parts of this account in Matthew chapter 26. So we're going to start reading in verse number 31 and down to verse number 35. And then we'll skip down to verse number 69 and read down to the end of the chapter. So we're just going to take those two passages, read them, and then put them together this morning as we look at this account. And the focus on this part of the gospel as we get there, of course, the focus on all the gospel at all times is on Jesus, right? He's center stage in all of this. We're coming up to the last few days of his life, really the last few hours of his life. His earthly ministry is over. And the focus here is on Jesus. But other than Jesus, as we'll see in this passage through these last couple of weeks, there's really another focus that's on Peter. Peter really rises to the forefront in these last couple of chapters. So we're going to spend a little bit of time with Peter in our passage this morning. So if you're in Matthew chapter 26, we're going to start reading in verse 31 down to verse 35, and then we'll move and go to the end of the chapter. So let's start in verse 31. Then saith Jesus unto them, all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this night, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter said unto him, though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise, also said all the disciples. All right, let's skip down to verse number 69. Let's get right to Peter just said to the Lord, I will not deny you, but look at verse 69. Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him and said unto him that were there, this fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again, he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him that they that stood by and said to Peter, Surely thou also art one of them, for thy speech bewrayeth thee. Then began he to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which said unto him before the cock crow, Thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly. About a year or two after we moved to St. Lucia and had kind of got settled there in ministry and had an idea of what we were doing and moved in and all those things, I decided that I wasn't really busy enough with all of that, so I was going to pursue my master's degree through an online source through a well-known college, and I thought I would just add more to my plate and pursue that master's degree. And the plan was that I would take one course every semester and just slowly work my way through all the necessary credit hours. I think I needed 31, 32, something like that, credit hours to get my master's degree. I didn't really care about the degree. I just thought this would be a good way to force myself to continue learning and studying and growing and expanding in ministry. So I decided to take that, and I wanted to challenge myself. And so about 7 or 8 years later, I think I'm sitting at 10 credit hours out of the 31. And so it's been a really long, drawn out, slow process. In fact, I don't think I've taken a course in, 5 years? Something like that. So it's a really long, drawn out process that I'm working through. And maybe I'll finish it up someday when things get a little less busy. I don't know when that will be. But I remember one of the courses that I took. I say all that to say this. One of the courses I took was advanced hermeneutics. And really, that is just a way to interpret the Bible and how we interpret it and kind of things that we look at when we are interpreting scripture. And this course, I took this course, and it was the most work that I have ever had in any course at any time to this date. I mean, it kept me busy all the time. On top of what I was normally doing, there was weekly discussions and tests and exams and assignments. And there was a big project. This was like a 4 or 5 week course. There was a big project that we had to work on for this course where we had to take one of the books of the Bible and basically break down and study the entire book and break it down into a sermon series that could be preached. And this sermon series, as we broke it down, had to have all the background info and all the word studies and all the illustrations that you would use and how, you know, the gospel fits into it and examples of some of the points and all of the big ideas and illustrations. I mean, we had to basically come up with a series of sermons for this one class of one book of the Bible. This is just one class. And this project ended up being over 60 pages long. And it was something that I worked on, like every spare moment that I had, I would be working on this project, making my way through it. It got to the point where it was like every minute that I had, I was here in this book, studying, writing this project. It was hard. It was getting closer to the end of the semester, and I was really dreading this. It felt overwhelming at times. It's like one of those things, I know I have to work on it, but I really don't want to right now. I'm kind of overwhelmed by the whole thing. But I would go and I would work on it. And finally, I finished it and passed it in. And honestly, I never really looked at it again. That was it. I passed it on to my professor. I think I got a fairly good grade on it, but I just kind of left it at that. Up until a couple of months ago, when we started our sermon series in 1 John in the evenings. And then I realized, as we're working our way through 1 John in the evenings, that all the work that I put into this project many years ago was actually worthwhile. It was actually very helpful. I could actually look at that and use it. Now, I think when I mapped out my sermon series in the book of 1 John, I think I did 15 sermons. I think we're at sermon like 30 or something in 1 John 4. So I've added a lot to it. But this resource was in, I look back on that and say, yeah, that was hard. Yes, that was difficult. But in the end, it was actually really worth it. I'm glad I did that. It was very beneficial to me. I didn't see it at the moment. Have you ever had something like that happen in your life that seemed very difficult in the moment? Maybe something happened to you and it seemed like a disaster at the moment, but then some time goes by and you look back on it just like I did on that course, and you look back and say, you know what, that seemed like it was a disaster in the moment, but now that I look back on it, it was actually beautiful. The Lord did something through that time of difficulty. I'm sure each one of us this morning have stories of things that we suffered, of things that we went through that were hard, some difficult times, things that were uncomfortable in the moment. But then time happened and years went by. And you look back at what was that terrible season in your life. And now looking back at it, you see the beautiful that came out of it. I'm sure we could all share stories of that this morning. That's the grace of God that's taking something broken and difficult and uncomfortable and making something beautiful out of it. And we often see that when we're looking back in time, but that's a really hard perspective to have in the moment, isn't it? When you're going through one of those difficult times. I mean, if I'm going through something really difficult and it feels like it's breaking me in the moment, it's so hard to see, it's so hard to understand how God can take something so heavy and so painful and so uncomfortable and do something wonderful. That's a really hard perspective to have in the moment. How can God take this situation and make something beautiful out of this? I just say to you this morning, as we begin looking into this, what we might call Peter's redemptive story, that if Jesus is your Savior, then He is at work in your life right now. He is doing something this very minute in your life. God is doing something unique. He is doing something special. Whether things are good right now, or things are, maybe you're in an anxious-filled, burden-bearing kind of moment, God is doing something in your life, whether you can see it or not. Whether you can make sense of it or not. God is using your circumstance to do a work in you that one day you can look back on and look at that season and say, look at the beauty that came out of that season. I didn't see it then, I didn't understand it then, but God was doing something, and now I can see it. Look what God did with all that hurt. I didn't see it then, but man, God did something beautiful out of that brokenness. The reality is this, there is a lot of brokenness all around us. There are some very hard things, some very difficult things that people that we love are going through. Maybe we ourselves are going through. Life has a way, maybe I should say it this way, Jesus has a way of breaking us and taking us from this posture of self-sufficiency and putting us in a place where we realize that we need Him. And that's exactly what we see here in the life of Peter. Now, just to get the context of this passage, because we are jumping around a little bit, we'll come back to it in a couple of weeks, but Jesus is, near the beginning of this chapter, sharing a Passover meal with His disciples. This is the last time that Jesus is going to share this meal with them. And if you put together all the gospel accounts, there's a lot going on at this last Passover meal. Jesus washes the disciples' feet as an example to them of how they ought to serve one another. And you know what they do with that? Jesus washes their feet, and the very next moment, the Gospels tell us that the disciples are in an argument over which one of them is the greatest. Jesus is trying to teach them humility and service, and they're arguing about who would be the greatest. Can you just imagine how disappointing that must be for Jesus? As he knows he's at the very end of his life, he's in the last few moments, he's trying to prepare his disciples, and there they are arguing over which one would be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And at this last meal, Jesus predicts that one of them is going to betray him. And of course, Matthew just told us that this was Judas. We just looked at that last week, but the disciples at this point have no idea who that's going to be. And they all start asking, Lord, is it I? Is it me? Am I the one that's going to betray you? And they go out from that Passover meal. Jesus says, listen, one of you is going to betray me, but I also want you to know that all of you are going to be offended at me tonight. You're all going to be scattered. You're all going to abandon me tonight. One of you will betray me, but all of you are going to abandon me. All of you are going to leave. And Peter, we just read it as usual, the one who speaks up, he says in verse number 33, though all men shall be offended because of thee. Listen, Jesus, even if everybody else abandons you, even if everybody else is offended at you, even if everybody else leaves and goes away and falls away, not me. They will, but I won't. They'll offend you. They'll walk away, but not me, Jesus. I would never, ever do that. I would never fall away. I will not be offended. In fact, he builds on that. After Jesus says, you will deny me, Peter actually builds on that. He says, Jesus, listen, I will not deny you. I will go to death with you if that's what it takes. I will not walk away. I will not deny you. And all the disciples chime in. They all agree. They're all saying this. Jesus, we won't be offended. We won't abandon you. Jesus looks at Peter and says, Peter, you say that you will not deny me. You say that you will not be offended. You will not fall away. You won't abandon me. But I say to you, Peter, that tonight, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Peter says, no, it's not going to happen, Lord. I will go to you with death. They leave there and head into the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus takes Peter and James and John, and they go a little farther in. And he says to them twice, he says to Peter, James, and John, listen, guys, I want you to watch and pray. Watch and pray. And then Jesus goes into that garden and struggles in prayer, and he's wrestling with what is about to come. Lord, if there's any other way, take this cup from me. But if not, your will be done, not mine. And Jesus is struggling there in prayer, and he comes out, and how does he find Peter and James and John? Are they watching and praying? No, they're not. They're sleeping. He wakes them up and says, fellas, I said to you, watch and pray. He goes back in and prays. He comes back out, and there they are sleeping again the second time. Peter says, I'll go to you with death. I'll go with you to death. But he can't even stay awake for a couple of hours. And Jesus told him to watch and pray. And as Jesus comes out the second time, Judas comes and betrays Jesus. Matthew tells us that all the disciples forsook him and fled. They were all offended, just like he said they would. They all left. I think this is, as you read through this account, I believe this is the breaking moment of Peter's life. Peter has had a lot of ups and downs in the gospel accounts. He's been brought into the inner circle. He's been given a leadership position. He's been renamed. He's been taught and discipled. But he's still not quite there yet. There's still so much of the old Peter left in him. The Peter that thinks without speaking. The overconfident, self-centered, self-dependent Peter. And what we're going to see in this passage is Jesus is taking Peter and breaking him down and then building him back up again. I think Peter is about to have one of the most instructive nights of his life. It's going to be a painful night for Peter. And the thought is this, is what I want us to get as we look through this passage. The thought is this, before God can truly bless us and use us, first of all, he needs to break us. Before God can truly use us and bless us, he first has to break us. There has to be that breaking. Listen, Peter needed to be stripped of who he was so that God could build him up to who he wanted him to be. Friends, before God can use you, he needs to break you of your self-dependence and self-centeredness, that self-dependence that is so prevalent in us. Let me give you just two really simple thoughts today. First of all, I want you to see the self-dominated life. This is who Peter was, the self-dominated life. I said at the beginning of the message that we all need this because I think this is where we all tend to be from time to time. For many of us, in fact, I would say to all of us to some extent, live a life that often is dominated by self. Right? What I want, what I desire, what I deserve, and I get upset because I'm not getting what I want to have, and I'm not I don't get what I want. I don't get what I think I should get. And I know this is true in all of us because I see some of Peter's old character myself from time to time. We all have this self-dominated life. Peter, as we start this account, is so full of self-confidence and courage. Jesus, I would die with you. So much confidence, so much courage that in verse 51, when this whole multitude, this whole army comes to the garden to arrest Jesus, what does Peter do? He's got so much confidence, so much courage, he pulls out his sword and he goes to fight. And with this faulty sense of confidence, he's ready to take on the whole army. And he swings his sword at the first person he comes to. And I'm sure that Peter was aiming for his head, but he was so bad that he missed. And he cut off his ear. And Peter doesn't know it yet, but in this self-confidence, he's actually fighting against the plans and purposes of God. In verse 57, they take Jesus and lead him away. His trials are about to begin. In verse 56, Matthew says all the disciples forsook him and fled. They've all run away, just as Jesus said that they would, and Peter is no different. He runs away, but then he follows. Matthew tells us that he follows at a distance. In verse number 58, it says, but Peter followed afar off. He doesn't totally run away, but he doesn't stay close either. He's not with Jesus in the trial, but he's sitting out by the fire. And three times, we just read it in verse 69 through 75, three times somebody identifies Peter as one of the disciples of Jesus, and they say to Peter, listen, I know that you were with him. I know you're one of his disciples. And three times Peter says, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know the man. You've got it all wrong. You're thinking of somebody else. I don't know him. And the last time, Matthew tells us that Peter begins to curse and to swear, saying, listen, I promise you, I don't know who he is. I don't know that man. And by the way, the words curse and swear that Matthew used there are not the kind of cursing that you think of today. Peter isn't using curse words. That's not the idea of that word. The idea of that word curse has the idea of calling down a curse on yourself if you're lying. In other words, may God strike me down if I don't know this man. That's the idea of the word curse. And the word swear there was to take an oath. Taking an oath was an incredibly serious thing in Jewish culture. It was invoking the name of God as a guarantee of that oath. So Peter was invoking the name of God as he's denying him. Basically, he's saying, listen, I swear on God's name, I do not know that man. May God strike me down if I'm lying. So Peter is not just casually denying Jesus anymore. He's actually intensifying this denial. Peter is so desperate to convince the crowd that he has nothing to do with Jesus that he resorts to calling down curses and binding oaths on himself. I mean, this is incredible denial from Peter. Listen, Peter went as far as he possibly could to distance himself from Jesus using the strongest language possible to do it, doing exactly what Jesus said he was going to do. And then Matthew tells us, after he invokes this curse and this oath, he says, I do not know the man the third time. The rooster crows, and it breaks Peter. Let me just give you a few characteristics that we see in Peter that I think we also see in ourselves, in a life that is dominated by self. This is who Peter was before he was broken, and this is what we struggle with in our characteristic from time to time. Notice, first of all, Peter was self-centered. Right, over and over we see this with Peter. Not only with Peter, but with all the disciples. They were just, how many times would they argue? They argued about who would sit on the right hand of Jesus and who would rule with him. Jesus washed his feet, washed their feet, and there they are sitting arguing about who would be the greatest in heaven. Jesus is suffering in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he asks Peter to watch and to pray, but Peter just goes to sleep. He is totally oblivious to the suffering of others and what God was doing around him. He was so focused on himself, he didn't see anything else that was going on. Peter was self-centered. Secondly, Peter was self-dependent, self-confident. Isn't it kind of funny to you? Reading that account of Peter trying to take on the whole army in the garden. He's got one sword. He's going up against a legion of soldiers, and he's going to take them on. And he's so bad at his aim that he doesn't even hit the guy where he wants to hit the guy. He just takes off his ear. And there's actually, it's interesting, we see a role reversal there, don't we? In that garden, when Peter takes out his sword, Peter doesn't need Jesus. In Peter's mind, in this situation, Jesus needs Peter. Jesus needs Peter to protect him. Peter doesn't need salvation. He doesn't need to be saved by Jesus. In Peter's mind, Jesus needs to be saved by Peter. And he takes out his sword. Peter's the one that's going to come in and save the day and fight for the kingdom. He's self-confident and self-dependent. I think Peter's also self-protectionist. When things don't go the way that Peter thought they would, he keeps a safe distance. He follows from afar. He doesn't want to get too close to God. He wants to be at a safe distance. He wants to be safe. I don't know him. Don't lump me in with that group of people. I don't want to go too far. I don't want to do too much. See, Peter doesn't want to be identified as a follower of Jesus. He was living a self-dominated life. Friends, I think sometimes we also can live this self-dominated life. We can be so wrapped up in our own plans, and our own comfort and our own preferences and what we want in life, that we miss out, like Peter did, on the greater picture of what God is doing in us and around us. And it becomes more about me and what I want than it is what God's doing. We come to church thinking, what do I get out of this? Instead of coming to church saying, how can I serve somebody else today? And God is working around us, but we're spiritually asleep, like Peter was. By the way, this doesn't just happen in church. This happens in marriages. It happens in families. The greatest reason I believe that we have conflict is because we're self-centered. What do I want? What do I get out of this? Sometimes we live the self-confident, self-dependent life. We face impossible situations, and just like Peter, instead of crying out in prayer and dependence, we take out our swords and we try in our own strength and our own intellect. We say, hey, I'm good. I've got this. I'm in control here. In our parenting, in our marriage, in our finances, in our decisions, in our struggles, I don't need God. God needs me. Until we hit the wall. Sometimes we live the self-protectionist life. We keep God at arm's length because we're afraid of what full surrender might actually cost us. We may be comfortable identifying with Jesus at church, but at work, at home, in school, we quietly step back to avoid being singled out or standing out. We want the benefits of being close to God without the risk of ridicule or rejection or sacrifice. Listen, a life that is dominated by self will always keep its distance from Jesus. The reality is, like Peter, we can be near enough to watch him, but too afraid or too proud or too self-absorbed to actually walk with him. And friends, Jesus loves us too much to keep us in that place. And he'll do what he needs to break us of ourselves so that he can rebuild us by his grace. So that's the first half, the self-dominated life. But just quickly, I want you to see the second point, and that is the grace-rebuilt life. I think that Peter had to go through this time of hurt and brokenness and pain so that God could use him and bless him down the road. Turn with me just really quickly to Luke's account of this. I want you to see this. Luke chapter 22. Luke adds something here in his account that Matthew omits in his. And to me, I think this is the turning point in Peter's life. This was the ultimate breaking. This is what really broke Peter. Look at this in verse 60. Peter, this is his third denial. Peter said, man, I know not what thou sayest. Luke 22, verse 60. And immediately, while he yet spake, the cock crew. Notice what, look at the detail that Luke adds. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Can you imagine in your mind this morning? I want you to just kind of picture this in your mind. What that look meant to Peter. Peter denies the Lord the third time. And Jesus looks at him. And the cock crows. And just the failure and the pain and the regret that Peter would have faced in that moment when he knows that he just did exactly what he said he would never do. kind of like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience when you do something at home, and when you were young, maybe you did this, and it was something wrong that you did, and your parent looks at you and they're not just mad, but they look at you and they're just disappointed. Like, I'm not really mad, I'm just disappointed. And that hurts so much more, doesn't it? And I can just imagine this look that Jesus gives Peter. He just turns and he looks at him, and all of that failure and regret and fear and all of that floods through Peter in that moment. And the Bible says in Luke there and in Matthew the same, that Peter goes out and weeps bitterly. Everything is turned upside down. Peter has done exactly what he said he would never do. He's absolutely broken. And he just weeps. Jesus pauses and looks right into the soul of Peter. And I don't even think we can begin to understand the agony that Peter goes through over these next 3 or 4 days as Jesus is crucified. And he says he knows within his heart, I denied him. I did exactly what I said I would never do. I said I wouldn't, and that's exactly what I did. And now he's gone, and they've crucified him, and I've messed everything up. But I want you to think of this as well. In Luke chapter 22, verse 31 and 32, Jesus says this, and the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not. Notice this, and when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. I think that's so powerful, because before Peter even denied Jesus, Jesus already saw beyond his failure to his restoration and his future usefulness. Jesus looked at Peter with a look that said, Peter, it's happening just like I told you it would. But when I prophesied your fall, I also prophesied your restoration. The look said, Peter, don't give up yet. The story's not over. There is restoration still to come. If I can predict your breaking, then I can also predict your restoration. Can I just say this to you this morning? The Christian life is a process of breaking down and rebuilding. That tearing down of our self-dependency and self-sufficiency, that's such a necessary thing for God to tear that down. Because when we go through that, when he does that in our life, it brings us to the place where we are reminded of just how much we need him. And how we truly need to rely on him. And how we need his grace. Listen, nobody likes to suffer. Nobody likes the pain. And the tearing away. And the stripping of our own self-dependence. But when we allow it to happen and we look back on it, we can say, wow, that was beautiful. That was exactly what I needed. God used that difficulty to drive me to the place where I trusted totally in him. I needed that. There's no better place that I could have been. We don't have time to go there today. I've used up my time already. I was hoping to get there, but we don't have time. But maybe when you go home, you can go to John chapter 21 for yourself. Where in that account, we find Peter, who had come to an end of himself, meeting Jesus again. In the same way that he first met him, he was fishing. And Peter, in that account, is lovingly and graciously restored and recommissioned. And instead of punishment and consequence, he's met with love and grace and kindness. You remember that account where Jesus said, Peter, do you love me? And he says, you know that I love you. Then feed my sheep. And that goes through that whole account in John chapter 21. Peter, after that account, after he meets Jesus and Jesus comes to him with that kindness and love and grace, Peter leaves that place as a totally changed man. Peter, in that moment on that seashore, was embraced by a Savior that he denied. And he was put back together. And if you go to the book of Acts, Peter, purged of that selfishness and self-dependence and overconfidence, was put into ministry and declares the gospel on the day of Pentecost, and over 3,000 souls are saved. I think Peter found that brokenness was the precursor to usefulness and blessing. And that self-confidence and self-centeredness turned to confidence in God and a God-given boldness and God-given courage that turned the world upside down. Friends, I don't know where you are this morning. Maybe you're facing some of that suffering, some of that pain. Maybe there's marital problems or family problems or financial problems. Maybe you find yourself in a place of struggle or hurt or pain. Maybe like Peter, you failed the Lord in some way and that failure feels crushing. Here's the good news that I want to bring you to this morning. It's this: Jesus doesn't waste our suffering. Jesus doesn't waste our breaking. What feels like it may be the ends may be the place where God is actually beginning something new in you, doing something wonderful. Peter's story reminds us that brokenness is not the last word. Grace is. Peter's story doesn't end with denial. Peter's story ends with restoration and usefulness. And the same Jesus who prayed for Peter, who looked at Peter with truth and love and restores him, is the same Jesus who intercedes for us today. So I don't know what you're going through this morning, but let me encourage you, don't run from it. Run to Jesus in it. Let his grace restore you. Let his grace rebuild you to the place where you need to be. Let it cleanse you of yourself and tear down that self-dependence and self-confidence and self-protectionism, and let him tear those things away and fill you with himself. Whatever it is he's doing in your life, let him use that to bring you to a place of total dependence and surrender to him, that he can use you and bless you from it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of his word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.